You're listening to KRUU LP 100.1 FM, the voices of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Grassroots, listener-supported, solar-powered radio broadcasting live from the Cultural District here in Fairfield, Iowa. And it is sunny today, so our solar panels are blazing today. And this is the first time we've seen the sun in, I don't know, I've been singing to myself, the sun will come out tomorrow, and it finally worked. And here it is. And this is Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and my co-host, Caroline Coburn, is not with us today. But we do have a very special guest today. If you tuned in expecting to hear Anna Hope, the author of The Ballroom, she was not able to phone in from her home in England with us today. And so we will try and get that interview at a later date, but we were very fortunate to be able to find a young woman who will be here in Fairfield next week, who is a filmmaker, Alana Waxman. She's been living in Montana, working on this film, her feature film debut for the past 2 years, Cheyenne is Burning. And Alana grew up in Fairfield. She attended the graduate film school at USC, and we're going to hear all about what it takes to be a screenwriter. Thank you for joining us, Alana.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Monica.
So let's start out with when are you going to be in town, and what will you be doing when you're here for the public? Sure.
Yeah, this is great timing, actually, because I'll be there next Friday, this coming Friday, February 3rd, for the art walk. And the reason why, or it just was good timing, that the film and photography art walk, that's the theme for next week. So we thought we would be a part of that. And my producer, Jerry Rafter, who she's a producer out here in Montana who's working with me, she's going to be joining me as well in person. So we'll be there at Neil Cunningham's place at the Central Park Custom Furnishing.
And that is on, I believe, the west side of the square.
Right. It's 56 North Main Street. And we'll be there starting the screening. Basically, what we'll have is the film doesn't exist yet. We have been developing it. I've been developing it, and I've been working with other people here in Montana to develop it for the last 2 years. And we have a script now, and we have our core team, and we've created an informational video about the project to help understand why we've been on this crazy journey, why we're passionate about it, and moving towards getting funding for this to begin shooting this summer. And we have some funding from the Montana Film Office, which is great. We received a grant from them a couple months ago. And so we're part of the way there, and we're just hoping to talk a bit about the project and see who would like to help us make this film. And we'll be screening that film starting at 7:30 and 8:30. The film is about 15 to 20 minutes long, and then Jerry and I will be there to talk about it and answer any questions.
And that will be next Friday, February 3rd, 2017, because sometimes we rebroadcast shows,
sure.
or they're online, and people may not know what even year we're talking about.
Yes.
And I wish I could be there. Unfortunately, I'll be traveling that day, but I'm looking forward to this. I did see one of your previous works, and I want to talk sort of about your growth as a filmmaker, how you got started. So let's go back to the beginning.
Sure.
You grew up here in Fairfield.
Mm-hmm.
Did you always have an interest in becoming a filmmaker?
I didn't. I first came to this sort of way of doing things from theater, and that came from doing the speech program with Rodney Franz, and starting when I was in ninth grade. Though I also was always involved with theater when I was even younger than that. I think I was in my first play when I was about 7 years old, and so I always really enjoyed theater. And Mr. Franz really had a huge influence on me, like so many of the students at MFAE. You know, he held us to such a high level, and really, we really worked really hard, and obviously for anyone who knows that program, you know, we always did very well because of his leadership. So from there, I really couldn't think of anything else I felt like doing for college other than just continuing in theater. So I ended up going to Connecticut College to study theater. And the reason why I knew about that program actually was because Ben Esty, who graduated from MSA a few years ahead of me, who also was a great actor, he was there.
Mm.
And that's why I ended up applying for Connecticut College and went through 4 years of theater training and really enjoyed it and really learned a lot about myself through all of the programs that I did. I did a lot of summer acting programs in Massachusetts and spent some time in New York, and kind of by the end of it, I realized that I actually didn't want to be an actor.
Well, I was going to ask that. Was that kind of what your thought was at the time, that you were going to be an actor?
It was. It definitely was. I loved the theater, and I loved what it taught me about myself through going through those programs and through performing a play. And but I realized that the business side of acting was something that I couldn't quite wrap my head around, and really had I just couldn't do it. And I really admire all the actors out there who can do that. And I just discovered by the time I was going to graduate that I didn't want to pursue it as a career. And I moved back to Fairfield at that point to regroup and rethink what I wanted to do, and ended up being asked by Donna Steinberg, who was the principal, I believe, of the boys' school at the time at MSAE, to help run the speech program, because Mr. Franz had left. My senior year, I believe, was his final year at MSAE as well. And so I ended up teaching. I just fell into teaching, and I did some directing in theater in Fairfield during my year back, and some acting. Elaine Spear had come back at the time, and we did a wonderful play called Room Service with a lot of great actors, you know, George Kelly and Jesse Bailey and Emily Martlin, who was Emily Schweitz at the time, and it was great. So I got back involved with the theater community in Fairfield at the time, and yeah, I guess long story short is I watched this movie called Across the Universe, which is a Beatles musical, a musical that was taking the music from the Beatles, and that was directed and created by this director, Julie Taymor, who also directs in theater. She's responsible for The Lion King on Broadway.
Oh, wow.
All those puppets and everything. So she's an incredibly imaginative, dreamlike director. And I watched that movie and watched a behind-the-scenes movie about that film. And
something clicked.
Oh, sorry. And something clicked, exactly. Yeah. And I just thought, I want to do that. I want to be able to create the way Julie Taymor creates, and I realized the value of film, that it was like theater, but that you had even more control to be able to express something to your viewers. You had even more control on what was being seen and experienced by your viewers, and it had even more, I guess, freedom of what could be seen and what could be created, versus, you know, being in a theater space. And I didn't know at the time, you know, what were even the good film programs, the graduate film programs, and immediately came to this conclusion that I wouldn't be able to get into grad school because I had no experience in film and I just had theater experience. So I researched it a little and then forgot about it for about a year. And by that time, I was living in Berkeley, California, and I met this woman who had been to USC years ago, and we were just chatting and getting to know each other, and she said, oh, you don't have to have film experience in order to get into USC. They just want to see that you have related creative experience and that you've got something to say. And I looked it up and realized that that was true, and I had about a month to get ready for the deadline, so I just really put all that I could into the application. There were some creative assignments that I had to do, a writing assignment, and you could either submit a photo essay, you know, a series of photographs that tell a story, or you could submit a short film. So I thought, well, I'll do the photos because I can't make a film.
And, of course, your mother is a photography teacher, right?
Right. So. And because I was always in speech, and at the time you had to choose which elective. You couldn't do more than one elective in school. So I actually never took my mother's class when I was in school, unfortunately. But I took her summer workshops when she would do workshops for my age group and just, you know, on the side would just get pointers. And,
right.
So, yeah, that definitely helped me, I'm sure. And I applied, and I didn't apply for any other schools for various reasons. And I remember my dad said, you know, well, don't you want to apply for other programs? You know, this is a very good program, and what if you don't get in? And I said, well, if I don't get in, I'll just apply again. And so I ended up getting in the first time, and so I started school there in January because they let in students both in the fall and in the spring, and I started in January of 2011 with about 60 other students. And
how long a program is it?
3.5 years.
3.5 years. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. If the program takes 3 years, and a lot of people take more than that. Even there were some of my classmates were still there finishing up their thesis project by the time I left. But, you know, for some people, especially people who are coming to that program from outside of our country, it can be helpful for them to actually stay in school for longer and get their feet underneath them before, you know, getting out of school and getting into the workforce where their visa situation might get more complicated.
That is true.
Anyway.
Now, Alana, when you graduated, you had completed a short film at that point, correct?
Correct. Yeah,
and tell us a little bit about that.
Blackout.
What was it called?
Blackout.
And what was it about?
It was about this 27-year-old alcoholic musician who was struggling to find her way. And you know, the short film is only 12 minutes, so you only have so much time to tell a story. So basically, the story shows her struggling, and by the end you see her considering, acknowledging that she needs to change her ways, that she can't quite continue in this way. And you don't know what she's going to do, but you're left with her acknowledging that need for change.
And you screened that here in Fairfield, didn't you? I remember seeing it.
I did, yes.
At the Sondheim.
Right after I graduated, we had a screening for that film. Yeah. And we also screened another shorter project called Pieces, which is something that I wrote. I didn't write Blackout, I directed it, but I wrote this other film called Pieces, which is actually a shorter version of a longer piece that I plan to do someday as well. And
I remember that one too. But tell me a little bit about it.
Sure, yeah. It's about a young girl who, really what you saw in that piece is a part, like I said, of the full story. So it really takes place in two different time periods at the same time, and it takes place in the 50s, and you're seeing this young girl witness her father disappear regularly and be somewhat distant, and you see the effect that the daughter is watching her mother have from her father acting that way. And then basically what you don't see in that short version is then the girl is grown up and that she sees the same behavior happening in her husband. Basically wondering what is going on, and her mother ends up getting sick in the story and basically somewhat sick from the relationship that she has with her husband and not ever saying something about it, never saying, like, well, what are you doing? You know, are you, basically he's not being faithful to her. And so it's about that young girl who's been grown up and her need to kind of break through that pattern and the question of will she be able to say something and break with the possibility of finding out the truth, which would also be uncomfortable. But to me, especially at this time, this period of time, you know, where there's all, I guess in all times, really, there's been talk of women's rights and equality. And I can feel that own dynamic in myself, you know, of just not always speaking up or not wanting to disrupt what...
Go along to get along.
Go along to get along, exactly. Yeah. And how that hurts. And,
yeah.
So I guess the inspiration for that story originally came from wanting to inspire myself and other women who feel that way to be braver than what we've been in the past, and it's not worth it, you know, to stay quiet because you're happy in a fake kind of way. And
Alana, did
really
you?
It's our time to really speak up. I think.
Did you see that a cappella group that formed online and rehearsed online, and then did a number at the march in D.C. last?
I didn't. Last, no.
And their song was called "Quiet," and that's exactly what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So that's a film. I have about 20 pages written of that film, but I hope that my plan is to make that a full-length feature film as well to do as a sort of next project in the future.
Hmm. You're listening to Writers' Voices, and our guest today is Alana Waxman. She is living in Montana, but is coming to Fairfield to show a film about the film that she's making. And the film she's making is called Cheyenne is Burning, and she will be here next Friday, February 3rd, 2017, at the Central Park Custom Furnishings, 56 North Main Street, at 7:30 and 8:30 p.m., so you can learn more about this new film. Let's talk, before we really get into what this film is about, I want to talk about the film, the screenwriting process.
Yeah.
Is writing something that you always had an interest in?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd say so, without really fully knowing it, though. I remember I used to read a lot when I was young, and that came a lot from my father, because he was always a really avid reader growing up, and I would read these young adult novels, I guess, or these short, you know, chapter books.
Mm-hmm.
And he would read he gave me the Boxcar Children series when I was young, and then I got really into this series called Thoroughbred, and it was about these young girls who were jockeys.
Oh, wow.
Racing. And I loved it. And there were a few other series that I got really into when I was younger. And I remember one day, I believe I was on an airplane with my family, and I just started writing. I started writing a story, and I was somewhat imitating the style of the Thoroughbred stories. And I remember my dad looking at it and being just really impressed of how good it was. But I remember thinking that I was somewhat imitating what I had been reading. But I do think that even in writing classes that I was in college, you know, that's what we would do. Or we would, you know, reading, I think, really helps you be a better writer and helps you find your own voice, and even imitating other writers helps you develop your own style. So I always really liked writing, and I write poems without really being trained at all in poetry. I just have written them throughout my life to help process emotionally something that I might be going through, and it just has always made me feel better and lighter if I can write a poem about what I'm feeling.
Mm.
So
how did that translate to screenwriting?
Yes.
I mean, screenwriting has very specific requirements.
Yes.
And did you find that difficult to adjust to?
Yeah, I'd say, well, so in college, I was a double major, actually. I was a theater and English major. So I had taken some writing classes there, not screenwriting, but I had taken playwriting classes. And I had also taken a short story writing class, which had a huge influence on me because actually this film, Cheyenne is Burning, was originally a short story that I wrote in that class in school, in undergrad. And also the story I was talking about earlier called Pieces, that was also a short story that I wrote that exact year. So what my process has become, I took some screenwriting classes when I was at USC and realized that screenwriting is such, it's a skeleton, really. And there's, unlike writing a short story where you paint the full picture, you know, the short story is the final version of that piece of art, really. And with a film, the screenplay is like more like a blueprint or a skeleton, like I said. And there's going to be so much more that comes out of the screenplay, you know, that the process is before you say, oh, this is the thing, this is the film. So what I've realized about screenwriting is that because it's such bare bones, it's really helpful to already know the full story, like in a short story, where you already know the characters fully and you've already figured it all out, and to then allow these nuances and a full understanding of who these characters are and what the story is to come out in small, subtle ways in a screenplay. Mm. But in a screenplay, you really don't have time, and it never really feels real to spell it out fully. And you have to kind of allow room for the actors and for the other crew members to come to it and embody it as well.
Oh, interesting.
So it's been a learning process for sure. This screenplay that I've written, Cheyenne is Burning, is my first feature-length screenplay. So it's about 80 pages long, which is on the shorter side, but it has a lot of description instead of dialogue. And I imagine the film itself will be about an hour and a half when it's all said and done. And that's, I guess, another thing, and that's an assignment that was given to us when I was applying to get into USC Film School. We had to write a 4-minute film that has no dialogue.
Oh, my.
And that was one of our first assignments when we were students there, too. We had to create a 5-minute film that had no dialogue, because I think dialogue can be a bit of a crutch sometimes in screenwriting and in film. It's a way to get information across, but in real life, there's so many more ways that we communicate and experience things that don't involve dialogue. And so if you're just having someone talk all the time and you're having these conversations back and forth and back and forth, you're getting the story, but you might not really feel anything from it because you're just being told something. And I enjoy films that are, you know, that are not dialogue heavy, and that there's other actions that you see the character do, or just even a look or just something that happens that tells you something about the character without being told by them saying, oh, I really like ice cream or something like that, you know?
Exactly. Well, it's the same as in other kinds of writing where they say show, don't tell.
Exactly, yeah.
Although it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to understand what the distinction is because, you know, you're writing it down. Isn't it all telling?
And, right. Yeah.
And, of course, dialogue can be a way to show.
Yeah.
If it's kind of, but not if it's coming right out and saying, you know, precisely what you're trying to convey. Then you're just, like you said, then you're just telling.
Yes, exactly. And
it's sort of the difference if I talk about someone as, and I describe and I say, oh, you know, that's a mean old person, and whereas if I describe, boy, you know, when I was a kid, when my ball went into her yard, and I was scared to go get it, and you know, that's completely a different way of showing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
seeing the the scene, really, instead of just telling us about it.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little more about Cheyenne is Burning. What is the story?
Sure, yeah. So Cheyenne is Burning, it's an identity piece. It's a story about a young Native American girl who's been raised away from her culture, and she's about to graduate from high school and is just starting to question everything and struggling to figure out how she fits in. And we follow her on her journey towards understanding herself. And that's the basic story that I'm trying to tell. And I think it's placed in the Native American community, but I think from the feedback I've been getting so far, for anyone really who might feel disconnected to their identity, their culture for one reason or another, which I think happens a lot, especially in our country, that I hope that they'll be able to relate to this story. And
what attracted you to the Native American culture?
You know, it's been a bit of a mystery to me exactly why. I just was attracted to it because that's why I moved to Montana. I was in LA and I had just graduated from USC, and I had written a 5-minute film version of this story back when I was at school and made that film. But I had placed it in Montana, and I had actually never been to Montana. And the Northern Cheyenne community is in Montana. So I came out here to visit and to try to understand what it's like here. And I was here for about 2 weeks that summer and went back to LA and realized that what a different world it was. And so I just decided to move here. And I moved here in the fall of 2014. And I was just trying to get to Montana, really. And the one person I knew in Montana was Kiersey Marcus, or her name is Kiersey Luther now, and she lives in Missoula, and so I moved into Kiersey's attic to help me get here, and I've been here since then. And
are you still in the attic?
I'm not in the attic, no. I moved out about a month later, but yeah, I've been here, and there's actually been quite a lot of films going on out here, and I've been able to work in film in various capacities the whole time that I've been living here, which was a surprise. I was expecting to work in a coffee shop and write my films. But anyway, that's Montana, and I guess I was just following my gut, really, and my own interest in the Native American culture and trying to understand, really, because it's always been a bit of a mystery where you're not, I feel like any of us are not really fully taught what really happened with the Native Americans in school. And there's just got this, if you don't know people from the community, they've got this, it's this kind of just mystery or kind of dark area of not really understanding what's really going on there. And so as I've been here for longer, I feel that I've gone to understand better why I was drawn to it, and I can talk about it more now, but at the time it was really just instinct, really, of feeling like there was something to that I wanted to understand about myself and about our country, and that's what drew me out here. And I've realized really what the connection is to my own family history and the Native American history since being here, and even in fairly recent times. You know, in the story itself, the character feels disconnected and from herself, and the whole point of it is to understand why she feels that way and why she makes these self-destructive decisions. And in order to instead judge her for it, to understand her and understand the parts of ourselves that make those sort of choices, and for the purpose of healing. And so I've realized, you know, my grandparents survived the Holocaust just not all that long ago, and I realized that there's things about that that I'm carrying that I am not fully aware of. And, you know, and I think also growing up in Fairfield was, you know, a wonderful place to grow up, and it has, as everyone knows, you know, a very specific point of view that's very different from everyone else in, the, in our country. And so growing up there and being in a community where everyone thinks the same way, and then leaving it when you're 18 and realizing how alone you feel.
Oh.
And how it's, you go from everyone kind of seeing the world in a similar way to finding maybe just a couple people that you can hold on to understand what you're saying when you talk about things in a deeper way. And so I think, I know that this character, even though she's Native American, I know that she's me.
Wow.
And it's just a way to talk about that feeling of disconnection. And of course the Native Americans, you know, so many of the Native Americans are suffering because of what's happened to them and in their community that's been really brushed under the carpet, you know, and to the point, like I said, you know, going back, that we're not taught it in school.
Right.
And,
right.
And it's not acknowledged. And I think that was really, you know, where we're seeing all of the varying points of view and all the different types of people, more so than ever, that live in our country, and how many things are not healed. And I think perhaps for a little while we were under the false impression that if that we were okay and we were getting along, but we're not.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of people who have a very different point of view that's really negative towards people of different cultures. And yeah, I guess the point of this film for me is to acknowledge that history of the Native American community and what they've been through, and to see it for what it is, and to see, therefore, what they've had to rise above in order to heal. And, you know, just like any community, there are people who have been able to do that, and there are people who haven't been able to do that. And so I hope that people will relate to this character. You know, it's a definitely, you watch this character go through some really challenging moments. And like my film Blackout, I guess I'm drawn to doing that, to creating those sort of stories, not because I want to, you know, just sit
you focus
in
on the dark side,
negative feelings. Right. I'm doing it for the purpose of a catharsis, really. And it comes from, you know, that's what they used to do in the oldest, in the origins of theater. That's where it comes from in Greek tragedy, that they would all gather and watch these tragic stories take place for the purpose of purging those feelings out of their society members, so they wouldn't have to go out and do those actions themselves in their lives, because in a way they already felt it. And that was the original purpose of theater, was for healing. And I think film, you know, we see so much junk out there with film, and just it's pure entertainment, and it's films that we've already seen, and it's stories we've already seen, and sequels to films we've already seen. And it's because film over the years has become more like a business than an art form. And they just, the studios, the people who are running the studios are business people, not artists in general, the big studios. And so what I'm really excited about with film is the power of it, and the power to create healing, and for to watch, you know, someone going through these really hard times, but getting through it for the purposes of just feeling what that feels like, and feeling the parts of your own life that relate to what she's going through, and that you can heal too, and you can have compassion for yourself, you know, and you can look at yourself in the way by looking at this girl Cheyenne.
You're listening to Writers' Voices, and our guest today is Alana Waxman, and we're discussing her upcoming feature film, Cheyenne is Burning. Alana, there's something that, you know, you talked about, that this film and your other films seem to be very dark, and you were explaining how that serves as a catharsis and helps people to heal. And you also were talking about having grown up in Fairfield and sort of in the bubble of everyone thinking the same way. And part of that thinking for a long time to me seemed like we ignored the dark. Mm-hmm. And we were only supposed to, I think the kids, children in their creative expression were encouraged to only express the positive things, the light, the bright things. Did you feel that sort of pressure as a young person? And if so, how did you overcome that?
Sure, yeah. I don't know if I felt it, if I was fully aware of it when I was in school, you know. And I didn't notice it. I was just raised in it, but I didn't really think to question anything when I was a student. And I more saw it after having gone to college and studied theater and then was brought back to help the speech program. And, you know, I saw then, after having been educated in theater more so, and the kind of material that I wanted to do in the speech program, you know, I could feel myself being limited as a teacher.
Right.
And then I realized I could see a little more clearly even, you know, the environment that I was brought up in. And I understand the value of it, I think, as for art, and I think this is an ongoing conversation. For the purposes of art, I think there is real value in being able to express any and all of the experience that we experience as human beings, because otherwise we get stuck.
Yeah.
And
well, I agree, so I do feel like it's art. Changed a little bit, that the kind of the community norms here have shifted a little bit. Probably,
yeah.
It doesn't hurt that David Lynch is the, you know, kind of the main leader of the, or the inspiration for the film school at MUM, and of course he does a lot of pretty dark things. So,
right.
Yeah, I think people are starting to see the value in that.
Yeah, definitely, and I've heard about that. That's been an ongoing discussion with the David Lynch program as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I guess that's where I stand on it. Just from, I can understand both points of view, and it's just been my experience and my own growth as a person and understanding myself and understanding my own feelings, that for the purposes of art and the purposes of healing and understanding, I think it is important to be able to express any and all that needs expression, you know, and But of course, it can be done with an intention of healing or not.
That is true. That is true. It can be, like, there's a movie out right now that's a very, very well-done movie, Nocturnal Animals. But it's very dark and not very uplifting, really.
Right. Right.
And, you know, I don't know how you would do that so that it would be. I mean, it's such a horrible situation, but yeah. On the other hand, it's a really wonderful movie, very real, very authentic.
Yeah And you know, there are, everything exists, you know, everything exists in our human experience, and sometimes it is, I've seen great movies that are just about being a accurate reflection of and portrait of that experience, and that can be valuable too, because you just see, oh, that's just the truth, that's just the way it is,
right?
You know, that's that person's experience, and it adds to my life to just to know that,
yeah,
to know that that's what that person has lived through.
You know, Alana, going back to Cheyenne is Burning, I would like you to share a little bit of the screenplay with us, but before you do that, I'm wondering, How does the native community there in Montana react to you coming in as a non-native and wanting to tell their story?
Definitely. Yeah, that's a great and important question. I showed up, like I said, you know, just kind of following my instinct and not fully even understanding what I was walking into and how I was a walking stereotype in a lot of ways. And, you know, coming from Hollywood and showing up and not being an outsider to the Native community and desiring to tell this story. And, you know, I for a long time, I kept it to myself because I just was figuring it out on my own of processing, you know, trying to get clear with myself of what my intentions were and feeling the judgment that actually often came from not Native people, but from other white people judging me for what I was doing.
Interesting.
And you know, I befriended a couple people early on that really helped, who believed in what I was doing. And one of those people was Lily Gladstone, who is an actress who, since I've known her, I met her 2 years ago, and in the time that I've known her, she has really been blowing up in a really wonderful way for her role in this movie called Certain Women that premiered at Sundance last year. And she was nominated for a Gotham Award, and she's currently nominated for an Indie Spirit Award for Best Supporting Actress. And there was talk that she was even going to get nominated for an Oscar just the other day, though didn't end up making that final list. And but Lily is of mixed heritage. She was born on the Blackfeet Reservation in Browning, Montana, and I expressed to her really early on why I had moved to Montana and what I was hoping to do. And I'm sure that especially because it was 2 years ago, I just kind of blurted out everything that I could think to say to her of what my intention was and why I was here and what I was trying to do. And I was so nervous at that first time that I talked to her, and something must have gotten across to her, you know, of something that spoke to her, and she got behind me really early on, and she introduced me to my friend Crystal, her friend Crystal, who's become my friend Crystal. And Crystal is actually from Lame Deer, Montana, and she was raised on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, which is where this character is from. So the three of us became very good friends. The two of them had already known each other for many years, and they kind of, especially because I didn't really know anyone in Montana other than Kiersey, we first knowing each other just because of my film and because I had talked to them about it, but then we just became friends, and I started spending all of my time with them. And so that was a huge part of just being able to be around and getting into just conversations with them that I can always continue to better understand what it feels like.
Mm.
What it feels like to be in the Native community. And of course, I can't ever really truly know, but I'm always learning. You know, every time I spend time with them, which recently is less just because they both are no longer living in Missoula, which is just a recent thing. But every time that I spend time with them, I learn something, and something clicks deeper, and then I go back to my script and realize something that I didn't see before and change it.
Wow.
And
well, Lana, why don't you share a little bit of the script with us?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I was thinking, I was just looking at it and trying to figure out the best part to share. I actually thought I would share just the ending.
Okay.
And that...
No spoilers?
Well, I mean, I don't think so. I think it'll just... the feeling of the ending is what I wanted to share and where it's going towards, what it's going towards. And I can give a little bit of a backstory just to understand, and we'll see what comes across, and feel free to ask me more questions. So at this point, Cheyenne has gone back to Lame Deer, which is the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, for the first time since she was very young. And she's visiting with her aunt, who she's just met, really. And the whole time throughout this film, you know, Cheyenne is feeling disconnected, but she's having these dreams of this song. This song just keeps playing in her head, and she doesn't know where it comes from. And the other piece that I'll share is I'll mention what's called the Berkeley Pit, which is a place in Butte, Montana, that's a toxic pool of water that comes from all of the copper mining that happened there.
Ooh.
Which I can talk about a little bit more as a sort of theme in the script as well. I'll be reading a mix of dialogue and piece direction, obviously.
Okay.
This is in Diane's house, and Diane is Cheyenne's aunt. Morning. Cheyenne eats scrambled eggs at the table. Diane washes dishes. Diane, do you need anything else? Diane, no, this is great. Thank you. Diane nods. As Diane washes dishes, she begins to quietly sing a Native American song. As the song builds, Diane stops washing dishes. She closes her eyes. Out pours a beautiful, pure voice, full of pain and longing, a prayer. Cheyenne is transfixed. She knows the song. It is the song Cheyenne heard in her dream. Warm morning light fills the room. Cheyenne listens, shocked and almost embarrassed by her aunt's vulnerability and her own. Tears run straight lines down Cheyenne's cheeks. The song finishes. Diane looks at Cheyenne. Cheyenne looks back at her. Diane, Grandma Marlene used to sing that to us. Cheyenne looks at her. Cheyenne, I've been hearing that song in my dreams. Diane nods. They hold each other's eyes. Exterior, Highway US 212 day. Cheyenne walks down the highway. She keeps walking. A pickup truck pulls up next to Cheyenne. It's Calvin. He looks at her. She looks at him. Calvin, come on, proud girl. I'll take you where you need to go. Cheyenne nods. Interior, Calvin's truck day. The sun is setting. It burns up the sky. Cheyenne, and this is voiceover. I am in a place where it rains and there is fire. Cheyenne watches the landscape change. Open, untouched prairie becomes littered with telephone poles, telephone wires, trains and train tracks, fences and buildings, lights and billboards. They pass the Exxon refinery in Billings. Smoke, bright lights, and steel construction stretch on next to the interstate like an empire. Cheyenne, voiceover. I'm in a place where water does not kill fire. It starts to rain. The water shimmers on the windshield against the burning sky. Cheyenne, voiceover. I want to be here forever. Exit signs appear for Butte and the Berkeley Pit. Can we get off here for a minute? That's Cheyenne. Cheyenne, can we get off here for a minute? Calvin nods. They pull up to the Berkeley Pit. The sky is blue with twilight. Cheyenne, voiceover. I can feel the mountains pressing into the walls and the walls pressing into me. Calvin, you're okay here? Cheyenne nods. She climbs out of the truck. Exterior Berkeley Pit, day/night. Cheyenne looks out over the Berkeley Pit. It glistens in the indigo night sky. Calvin stands a little ways off next to his truck and looks out over the pit. Cheyenne looks up at the stars. The blue sky deepens. The stars glow and fill the darkness. She places her hands on her belly. She looks at us. She takes a breath. Blackout.
And that was Alana Waxman reading from the end of her screenplay, Cheyenne is Burning. Now, Alana, one of the things that makes screenwriting so interesting is that, as you said, the script is just the beginning of the artistic expression.
Right.
And the rest of it requires a whole lot of collaboration.
Yeah.
So is that... And you're doing both. You're doing the screenwriting and planning to direct, correct?
Correct, yes. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the writing process is very sort of solitary.
Yes.
And the directing would be exactly the opposite of that. How can one person be good at both?
That's a really good question. And I think, you know, when I was in directing classes at school at USC, we had a teacher who came from theater, and he would always, the scenes that we would direct as an exercise, we could never write them ourselves. He would always make us direct scenes from movies that actually already existed that we hadn't written. And that's something you always do in theater. You know, you're rarely, you're often directing work that is not something that you've written, and you get the chance as a director to interpret it. And I think there's a real value to being able to come at it with fresh eyes as a director and to interpret it. And so in film, it's a lot more common for someone to be a writer-director. And you see that especially in a lot of independent films. And it's not easy. And I think, you know, I think you're exactly right, you know, that I've been absorbing experiences here in Montana and then going home and writing and being completely on my own and writing it. And as a director, basically, it's trying to communicate what I meant to everyone.
Right.
And then also, you know, that it becomes something greater than myself when it's a film, because all of these other people are going to be putting their creative selves and their interpretation into it, and it's going to become something more than what I can create on my own. And I think it's an ongoing process, you know, especially working with Lily. So Lily is who I was talking about earlier. Lily Gladstone is our associate producer, as well as I wrote a role for her in the screenplay.
Okay, she's not Cheyenne, though.
She's not Cheyenne. Only she would have been Cheyenne, other than Lily and I are actually the same age, and Cheyenne is supposed to be 18.
Ah.
And but we have a wonderful actress who, Lily, it was actually someone who I saw in a film when I first got here to Montana, a film called Rhymes for Young Ghouls that was at the Toronto International Film Festival back in, I think, 2013. And this wonderful actress, Deborah Jacobs, who's native Canadian, was the lead. And when I saw that film, I just immediately felt that I would love for her to play the lead in this film. And kind of kept that to myself over the last period of time. But more recently, you know, we through Lily. Lily actually knows her, which I didn't know at the time. And through Lily speaking to her, and then our producers and myself speaking to her, Deborah has come on board as the lead for Cheyenne, which is very exciting.
Wow.
And
now, how did you attract producers to the film?
Right. So, well, Jerry Rafter, who's going to be with me next week in Fairfield in person, she is a producer who's based here in Missoula. And I got to know her pretty soon after I moved here. She seemed to be just in the center of everything that was going on in film and here in this area. And I immediately felt that I would love for her to work with me, just because I liked her as a person immediately, and felt that she, you know, she's a native Montanan and she's worked so much in film here that I felt that I would love to be able to work with her. And so Jerry came on board about a year ago, I'd say. She said yes. And then we have another producer whose name is Ross Putman, who actually lives in L.A., and he just came on board last spring, and he actually found me, and I had applied for the Film Independent Screenwriting Lab down in L.A., and I didn't end up getting accepted to the program, but Boss is a reader for that program, and he read my script and was really struck by it and basically found out how to get in touch with me and pitched that me to be one of our producers. And that's wonderful, because he has strengths, you know, that none of us on our team have, which are you know, he's an indie producer in LA, and he produced a film that was at Sundance last year called First Girl I Loved. And so he's helping us. You know, we just had some meetings with some investors just the other day. We were all actually at the Sundance Film Festival earlier this week. And so he's able to connect us to people that we wouldn't be able to connect to on our own. And then Jerry gives that element of, you know, being able to get things done in Montana and just knowing what it takes to make a film in Montana. So I'm really...
Sounds like you've got a great team.
Yeah, I'm really lucky to have such a great, strong team who believe in this project. And we're constantly, you know, adjusting and readjusting the script because I feel like it's not finished, and always trying to make it more accurate, you know, and trying to be more and more conscious about writing a story from.
Well, Lana, when do you think you'll start filming?
Our plan is to start shooting in June. And one way or another, we are planning to start shooting in June. And so these next months will really determine that. But, you know, our whole point, we have a goal, you know, amount that we'd like to have to be able to begin filming at that time. But even if we end up with a little bit less than that, our state of mind is that we're going to just move forward. Of course, we'll see and reassess when the time gets closer, but really moving forward with full force at this point, and it just feels like it's time,
wow.
You know, with everything.
And how long do you think the whole process will take?
Well, we'll be shooting for about 3 weeks. It will take about 3 weeks of actual filming with our full crew, and then we'll be into the post-production process. And at the moment, I plan to also edit the film for a number of reasons, but one of those is just, you know, for financial ease and that I can keep moving the process forward, you know, on my own. And,
right.
But, you know, my producer definitely would love for us to be ready for the Sundance application that would be at the latest in October of 2017.
Wow.
So that would be just a few months later. So we'll see if we can make that deadline.
Well, good luck with that, Alana. And we're actually out of time. So I do want to remind listeners that you'll be here Friday, February 3rd at 7:30 and 8:30 p.m. at the Film and Photography Art Walk. And you'll be doing a screening of a video about the film at Central Park Custom Furnishings at 7:30 and 8:30 p.m. And we look forward to having you back in Fairfield.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Monica.
And see you all next week on Writer's Voices. Stay tuned now for Planet Earthwild. And I think there's a focus on Virginia Woolf. Yeah. Another writer of great renown. And see you next week. Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, produced by Monica Hadley and James Moore. Archives available on KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com.